Welcome to episode 3 of Pour It Out. I'm Haley.
And I'm Brandy.
Thanks for being with us today, guys.
Yes, thank you guys so much for listening in.
So this episode is going to be a really fun one. We talk a lot about college football, if you can't tell. Huge fans. So football season starts in a few weeks, and FSU's big season opener this year is actually in Ireland.
Yep.
And Brandy's going.
Woo! I'm going with my husband and my little boy that's just over 1 year old, and we're taking my mom with us as kind of all hands on deck. So we're very excited.
Yeah, it's going to be a good trip. I have a ton of friends that are going. There's a ton of people in Tallahassee that are traveling overseas for this game. And then honestly, like a lot of people around the country that are all, I just saw on Instagram posted a few days ago that the game's officially sold out.
That's great.
Yeah. So it's going to be a huge crowd. So I have not been fortunate enough yet to travel abroad or overseas. But Brandy has extensively traveled. So we wanted to take this opportunity for all of our friends that are about to go, or if you've never been overseas and you have a trip planned, even if it's not for Ireland, to do some travel tips and tricks and some hacks that Brandy has learned along the way when traveling. I know my parents just went on their very well-deserved retirement trip, and they went on a Mediterranean cruise for 3 weeks and had never been overseas. And my mom was really looking for something like this. Like, she read some travel blogs and like really a resource like this, where somebody that's knowledgeable like Brandy can talk about, you know, some different ideas and different things that have been beneficial for her. And honestly, also some misconceptions.
Definitely.
That you wouldn't know, you know, based on social media, that it's a lot different once you get over there based on, you know, what you've seen posted online.
My travel experience. So we traveled some growing up. We did, you know, some family vacations, but I always, and I told my parents this, I always knew that I would be a traveler. And so my first solo flight, my parents put me on a plane when I was 16 years old off to Canada. And from there, it really just took off. And I love to travel. It is it's a passion of mine, a hobby of mine. In my spare time, I enjoy just planning trips, just in general. May not ever go on them, but I love the research. I love the planning, the execution. You have to give yourself a lot of grace. Nothing's going to be perfect, but seeing different parts of the world, seeing different parts of the U.S. has just been something that I feel like has really helped me grow as a person, and something that I'm really excited to talk about. So,
yeah, I feel like too, for you as a history major and like such a history lover, like you getting to go experience all of these places in person has really like taken on a whole new meaning for you as well.
Yes. I remember my first trip to Europe was a study abroad when I was in college. And the second I came back, I was like, I will be back as soon as possible. There's so many places to see. And once you see some, I feel like they call it the travel bug for a reason, because it opens up your mind to just how many wonderful, amazing places there are to explore. And once you do it, you almost become more comfortable with the process. Yeah. It's not quite as intimidating, and it doesn't, because originally it sounds so big and so grand.
Yeah, very overwhelming.
And then actually once you do it, you kind of gain some confidence, just like with anything, and it becomes a little bit easier, and to the point where you're just like, yeah, let's go to London. You tell me when and I'll be there. You know,
we're still working on it.
Yeah.
So why don't we start off by you telling our listeners where all you have been overseas, and then out of the trips that you've taken, what was your favorite? And then we will get into all of your tips.
Okay. I have traveled pretty extensively in Europe, and then also Central America is really the two places that I have traveled the most. My bucket list is to travel anywhere and everywhere, to visit all 7 continents. Yes, all 7 of them. That is like my goal in life. Some of the places, I couldn't probably list all of the places I have been in Europe, but I have been to England, Scotland, soon to be Ireland. I've been to France. I've been to the Czech Republic. I've been to Austria, Italy. There's a few more that I'm missing, but I can't think of them right now.
So out of those that you just listed, what would you say was your favorite?
Oh, that is such a it's almost an impossible question, because each place is totally different. And that's something that I really enjoy about Europe, is that there's so many cultures in such a small area, a smaller area. So you can hop on a plane and within, or a train, and within 2 hours be in a totally different world.
I think that that's something that a lot of people don't understand either, is like, once you're in Europe, how easy it is to like go explore other cities,
because get around.
The train system is like very popular over there.
Yeah. One of my favorite cities, I have a lot of them, but my favorite city that most people do not talk about, that stood out into my mind as just absolutely phenomenal, will go back, will tell everyone about it, was Prague.
I was just going to say, when you said you didn't have a favorite, I was going to say, I specifically remember you coming back from that trip and just absolutely falling in love with Prague.
It is. It's one of the most stunning cities that I have ever been to. That being said, I also, as a country, I really enjoy England and Italy, and there are parts of it that I have explored and parts of it that I have not, on both of them. So those are definitely on my list to go back to, travel more extensively, see different parts.
Yeah. So for all of our friends that are going to Ireland, what is kind of your agenda? Like, what cities are you going to? Kind of walk us through what your itinerary is, and then we'll start getting into the specifics of what led up to preparing for this trip.
Okay. So our trip looks a little different this time, because we are traveling with a 1-year-old, and that just requires a lot of, you're not going to do the same things that you, that I was doing. You're just not going to see as much. You're not going to do all the same tours. You're not going to go on a whiskey tour. You're not really doing any of that.
It'd be very brave if you did that.
So we fly into Dublin, and we go to the Irish countryside for about 3 days. We have some things on our list to do, but we are flexible. One of the places that I would really like to visit is Adair, which is a really beautiful village. It's got a very famous golf course, so we're hoping to hit that.
Brady's husband is a big golfer, so he would love that.
Yes, that is his request, but we're being very flexible with this trip. And then our goal is to make it, we'll be about an hour and a half from the Cliffs of Moher. So that is, again, just one of those things that we really would like to see, and we're going to try and make it a priority. We'll be in explore some cities such as Galway and such, and then we'll be in Dublin for the game, and then we fly out that next morning to Paris. We land in Paris, and we drive to Normandy Beach, and we stay there and explore that area. My husband is a very big World War II history buff, and so that is his bucket list, is Normandy and the beaches surrounding it. So we've got a tour set up there, and then we hope to go down to, or go across to, the Mont Saint-Michel, which is a huge, beautiful abbey that stands on an island.
That'll be beautiful.
And that is something that we're hoping to accomplish. And then we drive back through the countryside, stop at a few towns. I have been to Paris before, and we will probably drive through and see some of the highlights, but we're staying a little bit outside of Paris at a resort style bed and breakfast, and then flying home. So it's going to be action-packed, probably in more ways than one, yeah. But it'll be really fun and a lot of really good memories for us. So
we'll have to get, if y'all make it to Normandy, we'll have to get Paul and my dad together when y'all get back, because my dad is dying to go to Normandy.
Yeah. Yeah, it is Paul's number one place in the world that he wants to go. So
That's exciting. We're
going to make it happen.
I can't wait to hear about it. Okay, so let's get into it. And really, I'm, you know, like I said, I've traveled pretty extensively within the U.S. And I've been to Hawaii, but I have never been overseas. So we're going to do this where I'm interviewing you as somebody that, you know, from a perspective of never going overseas. So we're going to start at the very basics, and you know, what that looks like, and then moving into, you know, more tips and tricks for like once you're actually over there. So I guess let's start at the basics with passports. Like, what does that process look like? And if you need to apply for a passport for a trip coming up, how long should you do that beforehand? And what kind of turnaround time can you expect?
I say if you are looking to travel outside the US, just go ahead and get your passport. That way you don't have to worry about it. For adults, it's good for 10 years. If you think you're going to travel outside the US in 10 years, go ahead and get your passport. So then if someone says, hey, do you want to go on this trip? It's in however many months. You already have it. It's taken care of. It's not that expensive to keep up with in a decade.
Yeah.
Comparatively, the turnaround time can be tricky. It depends. You can now get it expedited to where the turnaround time can be quicker, but they don't give you any guarantees. Just to give you an example, we had to get my son a passport. Yes, even babies need a passport. Theirs is a little bit different. They're only good for 5 years, because when we were getting his picture taken, I was like,
he's going to look very different.
10 and we're going to be showing this baby picture. So no, it's only good for 5 years. But we got it in, let me think, we're traveling in August, and we went and got his passport in May, and we received it within about 5 to 6 weeks.
Okay.
But that's not always typical. It can be longer, it can be shorter.
And do you apply? It's been, I applied for my passport many, many years ago, and it's now expired. But do you, is that something since COVID that has changed? Is it an online process, or do you physically have to go in person?
So I filled out all the documentation online, filled out all the paperwork, because you don't want to sit there and fill everything out while you're there. Or that's just me personally. And then I went, they have different passport locations. So some postal places do it, you know, US Postal Service. There's different areas, and you can, it's just a quick Google search, and you can find, you know, what takes the less amount of time, but you want to find somewhere that takes your picture there. I know CVS and Walgreens offers like a passport photo service. To me, those have never worked out good, because it's just another step then that you, versus just going and getting your picture taken at the spot that you're applying for the passport, because you know it's right. They're very particular about their passport pictures, photos, requirements. So it's just better to let them take the photo, look at it, make sure it's good, print it out right there, submit it while I'm standing there. It just makes me feel better about things.
Yeah. And I would say if you are in the process of getting your passport and don't have TSA PreCheck, go ahead and do it all at once. Brady and I both have TSA, and it makes the biggest difference. I also have a friend that I think a year and a half ago got global entry for she and both of her kids, which is not something that you can do in Tallahassee, but she drove over to Dothan, which is the closest place that does it. And then I know Atlanta also does it. So I've obviously never had to use it, but from people that I know that have used it, it's worth the 1 day trip to Dothan to do it.
Especially if you're going to travel regularly. Anything on those travel days that makes it easier is going to be beneficial to you.
Yeah.
So all that extra legwork is going to pay off come travel day.
Yeah. One thing that really stressed my parents out when they went overseas was the money conversion. So let's talk a little bit about what those rates are, what that conversion process looks like. My parents, once they got, so they ported out of Barcelona, Spain, and they, that was the first thing they went and did, thought it would be a really simple process. But the issue that they ran into back in May was that they would, they kept getting referred to banks like, oh, go to this bank. They'll, right. they'll convert it for you. Mm-hmm. And then they would get to the bank that was referred to them. And the bank would say, oh, I'm really sorry. You're not a customer here. You right. don't bank with us. So we won't convert it for you. So yeah. they spent several hours trying to find somebody that would do the conversion for them. Mm-hmm. So walk me through what that process looks like. And once you're overseas, the best way to do that.
Conversion fees are always confusing. I personally think that they still are, no matter how many times you do it. My, what has worked for me, and this, so back when I first traveled to Europe, we traveled with all cash or traveler's checks, which is like really bad, dating myself, but it wasn't as convenient as it is nowadays for credit cards.
Yeah.
It just wasn't like at all. Like I remember going and some of the students like had their debit card shut down and then they're short. I mean, it was yeah. just like this whole process. The best thing that works for me is to get it converted in the airport. You're going to pay a lot for conversion rates, but you're going to pay a lot for conversion rates across the board. There are, or as close to the airport as you can get, and you can, a quick Google search will tell you some of those conversion rates if there's money places around the airport, but those are going to be your best bet. Once you get into the city, it becomes harder to find places that will accommodate you. Especially it also too, it depends on the country that you're in.
Yeah.
So a lot of times when I am traveling down into Central America and I need to get money converted, you can also go to your bank prior to travel and kind of tell them, hey, this is where I'm going. What's the best route? They'll tell you information based on those countries that you're going to.
Yeah.
Honestly, the past few times that I have been to Europe, I've used my credit card. Again, the conversion rate is expensive. It's just something that I've gone into knowing, because you're going to pay a conversion rate one way or another.
Yep.
And so really it's about convenience and how much, again, how much work you want to put into it prior to going or once you get there.
Yeah. No, I would say on the credit card front too, make sure, I mean, this sounds like common sense, but make sure you tell your banks and your credit card companies that you are going overseas. I know someone that was just overseas recently and lost their credit card. So, you know, from a safety perspective, obviously financial perspective, make sure you
alert your banks. If you have the ability to freeze your card, like if you have the app on your phone, that's always something nice to have. That way, in case you do lose it or it does get stolen, you can just simply freeze it. Because that can help prevent some issues too.
Yeah.
So,
on the planning front, I know this trip looks a little bit different for y'all, but some of the trips that you've taken previously, let's talk a little bit about booking excursions ahead of time. Is that something that you typically do the research on your own? Have you hired a travel agent or company to kind of help you book those? What do you prefer? What do you like to do?
I've kind of done both. This will be my first time traveling over to Europe with no travel agent whatsoever, no travel company, anything like that. But again, this is a very different trip. So we knew that we didn't need to have a very rigorous schedule. We knew that if, you know, sometimes the things that you think you're going to get to, you've got to work around nap schedule and jet lag with a 1-year-old. And so we knew that this was going to look very different for us. However, I have traveled with some great travel companies. My mom and I have done 2 European trips. Both of them were wonderful, and they were through essentially a booking agent, and we were with a group of people that we had never met. And we ended up making really lifelong friends. We were on one trip and found out that we were related, like
that's third
cousins. We've had very good experiences with that too. So I think it just depends on what you're looking for, vacation or in an experience. As far as tours, I think that they are some of the best ways to see the cities because you're not stressed. Mm-hmm. They eliminate a lot of that logistical planning from you, which then allows you, I think, to enjoy more, especially if it's something that's a bucket list item or something that you're really looking forward to. You know, we decided for this trip, being that Normandy is Paul's top bucket list, we booked a private tour that was customizable, that we could put anything and everything that we wanted to see, how we wanted to see it, when we wanted to see it, what was important to us. We have like private vehicle that takes us, so we don't have to worry about parking.
Yeah.
And that was just something that was very important. Now the rest of the trip was just wide open, but we prioritized, you know,
what you want.
What. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this episode's also coming at a great time because you packed today. Started packing. So from a planning perspective, I know that you and I had discussed leading into this episode that you were going to try to travel as light as possible, especially for logistical reasons and for just like the amount of time that y'all are going to be gone. So tell me about your packing process and what that looked like for you this time. And then your packing process, taking factors into account logistically. So, you know, we talked about renting vehicles and,
absolutely,
you know, different space issues. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, this is a good one. So there has never been one time that I have been overseas or really on a trip ever and been like, wow, I wish I had packed more. I'm always like, wow, I'm not even an extensive overpacker, but you can make it through with a lot less than you think you can. I'm one of those that's like, oh, I'm going to be gone for 3 nights. I need 5 pairs of pajamas. Like, no, I don't.
Yeah.
You know,
I think we're both big, like, what if packers, because we're such planners, like, well, what if I needed that or what if, and then, right. Like you even when we went to the lake a few weeks ago, like I got home and was like, I think I wore 3 things that I packed. Yeah.
So I'm trying to be very intentional with packing to make a very small footprint that offers smarter solutions. So I am attempting to pack a capsule wardrobe that can then be, I can mix and match things. I have one rain jacket that also I can utilize as a regular jacket that I brought one pair. I think my total number of pairs of shoes is 3. One pair of tennis shoes, one pair of boots because it's a little cold and rainy in Ireland, and one pair of sandals. That is an extraordinary accomplishment for me. I also feel like when you're going to Europe or you're going on a vacation, you think of it as like, this is my chance to wear my wardrobe, or this is my chance.
And you're going into it trying to be really fashionable instead of practical.
Yes. Yes. And I think that gets me every time because then I've got 5 scarves and 4 pairs of jeans. And
that's a big, and we're going to talk about this in a little bit, but that's a very big Instagram versus reality.
Absolutely. Yes. And when you are traveling in Europe or really anywhere outside of the US, they live on a lot smaller footprint than people in the US. They do not drive big SUVs. They don't even have them available for rent. They don't, their roads are very narrow. If you're staying in a hotel and you're lugging up all that luggage, it's going to probably be on a cobblestone street that's hundreds of years old. It just is very different when you are actually having to carry the luggage around versus when you're packing for it. In your head, I think that you think, I will absolutely use all this. But really what you need is just the essentials.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, again, this even sounds like common sense. But I mean, you say, oh, I'm bringing boots because it's going to be a little chillier. Like, we're from Florida, where, I mean, literally the heat index today in August was 112.
Right.
So we're thinking about in terms of like our weather. And I, you told me a few days ago that like you and Paul were talking about packing, and you mentioned to him like, oh no, it's going to be like the highs in the 60s. Yeah. And he was like, oh, well, I was just going to pack short sleeve shirts. Like, I didn't even think about that, because you just think in terms of what we're used to every day. So I think taking into account too, like, it sounds dumb, like, oh, make sure you check the weather. But like, no, like the difference is pretty substantial.
Yes. And see if it's going to rain, see how cold it's going to be, see how hot it's going to be. And also think about what you're doing. Like, we have a lot of, like, we're driving a good bit. We are going to be walking a good bit. I'm going to be chasing around my son. So I need to be comfortable, and I need to be like things that aren't going to wrinkle, because you're not going to bring a steamer, and you're not going to bring, you know, a lot of places don't have irons. And so bring things that don't wrinkle easily. Just very practical hot things. I'm also trying out packing cubes this time around, instead of each of us packing our own suitcase, to try to, in case of, well, first of all, one, to make it more streamlined and more easier on me, the mom, but also if our luggage gets lost, we're packing each day, all three of us in one packing cube. So it's just like, here, this is what we're wearing on Thursday.
Yeah.
This is what we're wearing on Friday.
Did you buy those on Amazon, or where did you get those?
Yes, I did buy them on Amazon, and I bought the ones that compress, so they hopefully take up a little less room in the
We will suitcase. Make sure to link those in the show notes.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about the difference between cities versus towns from a logistical perspective, and then also like what some of the differences are, and what the pros and cons are.
I'm pretty opinionated about this, because I feel like, okay, let's say that you go to England and you find London and you stay there the whole time. That would be like essentially if you were visiting the United States and you spent your entire time in New York City.
Yeah.
Do you think that you got a good feeling, a good overview of the U.S.? Probably not, because you only saw a small – you really only saw city life. One of my favorite towns in the entire world is the city of Bath, which is a few hours outside of London. It is the most beautiful town. I recommend it to anybody that is going there, that is going to London, because I just think it is such an essential stop, and it shows you an entirely different side of England that then will make you want to be like, oh my goodness, there's so many other parts. And that is what I've experienced in pretty much every country I've been to, is the big cities are great. They're beautiful. They're loud. They're exciting. And then you get outside the city and you find that same calmness and a completely different experience in those rural areas.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important to really try to focus on seeing a little piece of all of it, to, especially if you're there for a short period of time, but to get a feel for it, to be, because there have been places that I have been to just for a few hours and marked on my list, like, I absolutely want to come back here.
Yeah. And I feel like doing both cities and towns is a really great way to immerse yourself in the totality of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of segues into something else we wanted to talk about, which was expectations versus reality. And I will say, when my parents were in the Mediterranean, I think that one of their biggest expectations versus realities was navigating some of these cities and towns. And one of the things that I remember my parents coming back and telling me that they were really surprised about is that a lot of these cities and towns don't have street signs,
mm-hmm.
so that the navigation, it's like, oh yeah, I'm going to go get directions from, I don't know, somebody in the shop, and they tell you, and then it's like, okay, well, you get out on the main road and you're like, okay, well, I expected there to be road signs like there are in America, and there's not. So I know, again, on that expectations versus reality, that was something that my parents, who went abroad for the first time, were very surprised by, mm-hmm. and found it pretty difficult to navigate. Mm-hmm. So do you have any tips for navigation?
I think that you, especially if you are in a country where there is a language barrier, where they're speaking a different language, you're going to have a navigation issue, even if you are just simply trying to get on their version of a subway, just because all of those stops, all of those signs are going to be in a different language. And some of them are, to our eye, they look very similar.
Yeah.
Even though they're not. And I think on the navigation end, you have to give yourself a lot of patience and a lot of grace. That is why I do encourage tours for things that you really want to see or that are really important to you. Because I know me, and I know that I'm going to get frustrated if I'm trying to see something or accomplish something that's on my list versus just sometimes I just want to take a day and just soak up the experience.
Yeah.
So I think those expectations, you have to figure out, what am I trying to accomplish here? Am I trying to see something that I have wanted to see my entire life and I only have these 2 days to do it?
Mm-hmm.
Or am I just here to soak up the culture and walk around and see where the wind takes me?
Yeah.
I think there's two different ways that you can experience travel, but you have to be in the right mindset.
Yes. And I think that that really plays into something that we've talked about too, which is like setting your expectations ahead of time. So
absolutely.
Like knowing what you're getting yourself into and knowing, and yes, to your point, having grace for yourself that like, even if this isn't the first time that you've done this, it can be frustrating and it can mm-hmm. be difficult, especially depending on where you are.
Mm-hmm.
When you have traveled by yourself, like outside of a tour, have you found any tools that have helped you with the navigation?
I think you get very well versed in Google Maps. This sounds so ridiculous, but it is true. I practice with Google Maps. I will pull it up even if I'm at home or in an area that I'm comfortable with, so that in the event that I don't have service, I can still look on a map and decipher, okay, this, I think it's something to say about old time map, or being able to read a map and being able to really look and be like, okay, this is where I'm trying to get, like, how is the best way to get there without a navigation or somebody there telling me. I think it is a skill. I think it takes practice.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So that sounds really silly, but it is something. And my husband does it too. Like like if we're somewhere traveling, even if it's just Atlanta or wherever, he will track where we're going, what route we took, just to familiarize ourselves. And we kind of do the same thing.
I will tell our friends that like are raising kids right now, one of the hands down most beneficial things that my mom ever taught me growing up was how to navigate.
Mm-hmm.
Basically the time I could read, if we were going somewhere, my mom, and this was back in the old school map days, Google Maps weren't a thing, smartphones weren't a thing. She would hand me a map in the back seat, or this is when you got on MapQuest and printed out directions, and she would either hand me a map or hand me MapQuest directions. Mm-hmm. And from the back seat, she would go, okay, get me there.
Right.
She would teach me, like, as we were driving, how to read road signs on the interstate and how to navigate, and
mm-hmm.
have me tell her, okay, we just did X. What's my next move?
Right.
And I would have to learn from a very young age how to navigate. And that is something to this day that I think is the most beneficial thing she taught me, because I can pretty much get myself out of a situation from a mm-hmm. navigational standpoint.
Right. I will say something else that has come in handy more times than I can count is when I am booking something, whether it be a hotel or a tour, or I know somewhere a restaurant that I want to go to, I will look it up on Google Earth. Look at the actual, what it looks like from the road.
Yeah.
How to find it. I mean, that's what I've done with the Airbnbs that we're staying at, because I want to ensure, one, that it's real. Two, that it's safe, that it's easily accessible, that there's nothing around it that gives me some caution.
Yeah. No, I think that that's a really good segue into what I was going to bring up next, is that safety awareness. So, you're traveling overseas, whether it's a place you've been before and it's a newer a newer part of, you know, a country mm-hmm. that you've been to, or you've never been to this particular country. But let's talk a little bit about what some of the safety concerns could be and what mm-hmm. you do to kind of mitigate some of those safety concerns and safety awareness, mm-hmm. especially being in unfamiliar towns and unfamiliar countries, like trying to find out, hey, is this area that I'm looking at safe?
Right. One thing that I always tell people when they're traveling abroad is to have not just awareness, but heightened awareness, because you are the one, the other people that are around you are very familiar territory. You are in unfamiliar territory. As much as you think you may blend in, you don't. To make sure that you are protecting yourself just by being alert, always knowing where you are. It's in a different language, even knowing just a restaurant landmark or something to go off yeah. of if you get lost. I never carry a backpack in Europe. I always carry a crossbody bag with a zipper, especially in big cities. It's just something I was told the first time I went to Europe.
Yeah.
I really do it anywhere I'm traveling, just because I think it's a very good safety tool. You have everything that you need right there.
Yeah. Well, let's face it. One of the things everybody's heard from, as long as we can remember, is how bad the pickpocketers mm-hmm. are over in Europe.
Yes. Yes. And they're very experienced, and they, again, as much as you think you blend in, you don't. And that is what they are trained to do. And so I like a crossbody bag because I can keep my hand over it. I can keep it zipped up, and I know that everything's right where it needs to be. I also, if I get into a, I feel like there's a lot to be said for gut instinct. So if I turn down a road and I feel like, this is probably not the greatest area of town, I'm going to turn around and go back immediately without a second thought, just because I feel like there's a lot to be said about your gut instinct, and that you should trust yourself when it comes to that.
100%. I mean, really, especially overseas, but just life in general. Something that we talk about all the time, and this again is just life in general, but I feel like it's heightened with pictures from abroad, is quite literally Instagram versus reality.
Yes.
And I feel like this is something that I know that you are very passionate about and have a lot of feelings about. But, you know, it's what you see, all these influencers that go overseas and go abroad. And yes, it's beautiful and the pictures are beautiful. And yeah, it looks like an amazing trip. But I think it's really important for people to keep in mind that what you see isn't what's always accurate. So
it's
really never accurate. You know, you have no idea. Yeah, that picture's pretty, but you have no idea how many takes it took them to get that, or like what led up to it,
the crowd
that they cropped out. So let's talk a little bit about your disdain for Instagram versus reality.
So my thought is, I have felt this way for a while, is that if you are going somewhere based off of an Instagram picture, you are always going to be sorely disappointed, because that is just never how it is in real life. And I know, because I've been to some very Instagrammable places, and it is absolutely breathtaking, but it is not how it is depicted in a photo. And when you travel, first of all, there's going to be issues. There's going to be hiccups. There's going to be travel delays. There's going to be, it's going to be hot or cold or rainy or a million different things. There's a lot of logistics that go into planning how to get there. And then the problem is that those Instagram places that you're wanting to go, or that you envision, everybody else is envisioning as well.
Yeah.
So the crowds, most of the time, it is jam-packed, wall-to-wall people, to the point where if you are claustrophobic, you get a little anxious, a little nervous. It's hard to find public bathrooms. It's hard to find water that's easily accessible. There are just a lot of things that people don't think about when they're looking at a photo. And so I think that kind of is, to me, has made travel a little bit more difficult. People have an expectation in their head of, this is what this place looks like. And it may be what it looks like in that photo, But that's not what it portrays in reality. And reality has a culture that is just waiting to be soaked up. But you have to be able to look past all the imperfections that that photo doesn't display to really be able to enjoy it.
Yeah. No, I think that those are all really great points. And yeah, I think crowd expectation is a really big one. Like, I think a lot of people don't realize or don't go on these trips with the understanding of just how crowded and touristy a lot of these places are, and that it is hard to get around because you are quite literally packed into these tourist areas like sardines.
Yes. You cannot do anything very quickly because, again, the amount of crowd control, the amount of people, the amount of effort that it takes to get around just navigating through the crowds can be a lot. And you have to have an amazing amount of patience when you go, and you have to set that mindset early on. Otherwise, you are going to be disappointed and be like, wow, that wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be.
And it's going to overshadow whatever it was that you were wanting to go see.
Yes.
Yeah. Lastly, I saved this one for last because I feel like it's going to be pretty lengthy answer. You're traveling with a baby for the first time overseas. Ooh. I mean, you've obviously taken him on trips, you know, in the U.S., but you're traveling with a newly one-year-old for the first time overseas. So let's talk a little bit about what that planning process looked like, what you are packing for him, if there's a plan to keep him entertained on the plane, and then kind of how you plan on navigating traveling with him during your trip, and like if you have a schedule for him, those kind of things.
The planning process has been interesting in that I have tried really hard to not over plan because, again, with the expectations, I don't want to set myself up for this is how this is supposed to go.
Yeah.
Because honestly, I have no idea how it's going to go.
I have this vision in my mind that he's going to love a plane. I think so he's going to talk to everybody.
Yes. The plane, I have several activities for him to do, lots and lots of snacks. I have like a little snack board that you like hide the snacks in and he can press the button and open them.
No, it's like a dog toy.
It's like a dog toy, but hopefully it'll entertain him for a while because he likes snacks and he likes looking for things.
Very snack motivated.
Yeah. So I was like, I mean, that buys us some time. The plane is, it's going to be what it's going to be. If it's horrible, it ends at some point in time. And if it's great,
also ends for everybody else that may have to listen to it at some point.
We're going to bring lots of earplugs for everybody, pass them out as needed. But hopefully we're going to give ourselves a lot of grace. And then hopefully the people around us give us a lot of grace too. Yeah. People travel with babies all the time. But I am super excited. He'll never remember this trip, but we will. There's also a lot of like logistical things that go into.
Yeah. Like I know that you've done a lot of legwork, especially with like what's offered at certain Airbnbs and then like things that people might not think about. Yeah. Like car seats and pack and plays and that kind of stuff that you can't take with you. So let's talk about things that you kind of had to think about ahead of time that like, oh, hey, I can't take X or, you know, that. And because you can't take things like a car seat and like a pack and play, what did you do to alleviate those stressors?
Right. Well, technically you can bring all those things if you really want to. But again, our approach is the less stuff we bring, the less stress we have on us. So we're trying to make our footprint as small as possible because I feel like, you know, more stuff gives me more stress.
Yeah.
So I was like, if I can eliminate and just get the essentials, we can get everything else.
Well, and I feel like this will be really good for other young parents to hear because one of their stressors may be, I want to go out of the country, but I don't want to right now because I'm stressed about thinking about taking all of this stuff.
The baby has all the stuff.
So what did you do to kind of get around that and make it easier for yourself?
I decided that we were going to rent a car seat from the car rental service. You do, if you rent a car, make sure that you call that rental place directly to reserve it. Even if you click it online that you need a car seat, they will not reserve it unless you call them. Just a little tidbit. I also contacted all the places that we're staying to see about travel cots, pack and plays, etc. I figured as long as they have something, I can bring a little mattress pad and a sheet and make it work. He's also older than one, so he has the ability to have that stuff in his crib, which makes that part easier. I also, you know, things like his snacks, his milk, you can bring through TSA, which is incredibly helpful on the travel end. And then things such as...
Yeah, and you said there's no liquid restriction.
Right. So you can bring like pouches, you can bring, which is very helpful because then you're not stressed, nearly as stressed about what to feed them. And then you can just supplement as needed, you know, on the plane. But you have some sustenance to offer them. And then just really a go with the flow attitude, which has been difficult for me, but hopefully will pay off in that I feel like if you bring the stress, then it projects stress to everybody else and just we want it to be enjoyable.
Yeah.
So
yeah, this is, I mean, literally it would be the trip of a lifetime anyway, but like in literally our entire lifetime, I have not known Florida State to play overseas. So not only is it a once in a lifetime trip, it's a once in a lifetime game.
It should be very, very fun. My last little tip that I will leave you guys with, because I almost forgot to mention it and it's very important, is one, I put together a PDF before we go on a vacation of any sort of anything and everything reservation-wise that we could possibly need.
Yeah.
All the reservation numbers. That way I'm not having to go back through my emails and search and look, because I've had that happen one too many times.
Yeah.
And then also too, if you're traveling out of the country, make a copy of your passport or take a picture of your passport on your phone or do both, and then keep that separate from your actual passport. In the event that you lose it, you have something.
Yeah, no, that's a good thing too. One of the things that my parents did for me that was super helpful was they gave me a copy of their itinerary.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew what their flight patterns were and what cities they were in, what days, just so that like somebody, God forbid something were to happen, somebody back in the States knows, hey, God forbid something happened, they should have been here at this day and this time.
Yeah. Somebody knows where you're supposed to be when. So that's always helpful too. But
yeah. Well, I'm really excited for you. We'll have to do a little post episode when you get back and,
A little recap.
Tell us how it went. But I'm really excited for you and all of our friends and Knoll fans that are going. We're super excited. Trip of a lifetime. And we cannot wait to hear all about it.
Thanks. Hopefully this was helpful for you guys that either are traveling or are wanting to travel. And sometimes it can feel, you know, if you've never experienced it before, it can feel very big. And I'm here to tell you that traveling is one of those things that once you do it, you are just never going to look back and just be like, I could go anywhere. I could do anything.
Yeah.
It just kind of gives you that confidence. So I hope that this episode helped a little bit and gave you maybe some tips on either planning that travel or implementing that travel that you've been thinking about, or if you have an upcoming trip, maybe some things you haven't thought about.
You know, we've said this in other episodes, but we not only are we, you know, on the podcast, we also have our TikTok and our Instagram. So if y'all have any questions or some ideas or other tips that you would like to know about, or you have any questions for Brandy about travel, just shoot us a message and we will be happy to answer any and all questions. And I will make sure to link anything that Brandy's talked about in the show notes. So that might be some helpful information for you as well.
Yes, I'll kind of go back through. I have some more toddler things that we could maybe link that if people are looking for. So,
for sure.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, y'all, and have a great week.
Thanks, guys.